through. So,
it's my story, I can't really screw it up, right?
And none of you know me, so I can lie, but it doesn't work for me anymore. Thank you so much to you guys for welcoming us. Thank you to Lars for inviting me. I'll tell you that when I got the message that they asked me to come here and speak, I was excited. It was nice. And then probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 days later, I said, what if they asked the wrong person? What do they really need to ask me, right? My name's on the CD. So I'm pretty sure they got the right person. We'll see after this. So I'll tell you this. I didn't want to come to Narcotics Anonymous, right? I didn't want to get clean because I was good. I was good, the people in my life, not so much. I was making them miserable. And I didn't have a bad childhood. Like, I didn't come from parents who were addicts. We kind of lived like a gypsy lifestyle, if you will. But it wasn't a bad childhood, right? So I guess it's just the luck of the draw. It runs in my family. So when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it was because when I was in treatment, they make you come and get your slip sign, right? So I would come, and I would know that I wasn't anything like you, right? I didn't belong here. I just was there to get my slip signed, right? So I automatically separated myself because I knew I wasn't like you because I didn't stick a needle in my neck. I didn't lose my kid. I didn't lose my car. I lost a job, but I didn't really think about that. I still had a roof over my head, you know, so I didn't put it together that it wasn't about what I used or how I used it, right? When I came in, you would read all these freaking readings, and I didn't know what it meant. None of it made sense. You talked about God. I didn't know anything about that. I was pretty sure it was a cult. Everybody circled up the end and chanted. So I just did what I had to do, right? Just get my slip signed. And it was, I'm just going to tell you real quick, like, this is uncomfortable for me to be sitting here, right? Like, this isn't my gig. Normally, Joel's the one who speaks, and it's really easy for me to sit where he's at. The one thing I do know is that in order to get comfortable in anything, you have to get uncomfortable first, right? So hopefully if I do it enough, eventually it gets comfortable. So I'll go back to, so I went to the meetings because I had to go to the meetings. And these people in there would say, keep coming back. I don't really have a fucking choice. I have to come back. I gotta get my slip signed, right? But I would come and I would come high every time I would come. Where I'm from, this little town in Washington, they have this clipboard that goes around and you sign your name on there and your clean date and how you're feeling that day, what a bunch of stuff. And I would write a different date down every day because I couldn't remember what I wrote down the day before. And they would take the sheets off every day so I couldn't look back and see what I wrote. So I would just write a different date every day. And I just never think anybody noticed. They did. So people would say, get a sponsor, work the steps, right? Okay, so I asked the lady to be my sponsor. Nobody said what you're supposed to do with a sponsor, right? So I got one. And nobody really, like, the steps, when they're on the wall, you see them on the wall, like, there they are, right? How do you work on them? Nobody told me that either. So I bought all the books. So I had a sponsor, and I had the steps, and I thought I was doing the deal, right? Still using. And none of it made sense, right? So if you're new here and this all sounds crazy, just keep coming. I know that sounds a little cliche, but just keep coming, right? Eventually something clicks, and maybe it doesn't. My hope for you is if it doesn't, you go back out and you have the opportunity to come back in. because many of us don't get that opportunity, right? So I just kept coming, and I had this sponsor, and not using was never part of the process for me, right? I didn't think about that part, because I was comfortable using, right? That's where I felt comfortable. I could sit in my own skin, right? Until I kept coming around, and you guys were all nice to me, and you'd ask me to go for coffee, and I would say, no, I gotta go home. And I didn't want to let anybody get to know me, right? So eventually, it came down to the fact that, like, I didn't want to use anymore, right? I didn't want to, but I couldn't stop, right? Like, I didn't know how to stop using. Probably gonna cry. So the thing is, I would leave my house and it was like a half an hour drive to this meeting. I would sing every day, hid in the corner, right? But it was a half an hour drive, and I would give myself a pep talk on the way there, right? Like, when you leave there, you're gonna go left and you're gonna go straight back home. You are not going to the ghetto, right? You're not going there today. I just pump myself up, and I'd sit in the meeting, and I'd feel good. And because I never let anybody get to know me, right? And I would leave there, I would turn right, and I would go to the ghetto. And I would sob all the way there, and I would sob all the way home. Because I just couldn't get it, right? I didn't know what was wrong with me. Like, why couldn't I stop, right? Like, everybody says, just don't do it, right? Why couldn't I just not do it? And that was so hard for me. I didn't understand what was, like, wrong with me. Why, right? I had a husband at the time, not Joel, he'd be like, you're just fucking crazy, like, just don't do that, just, like, okay, but why can't I just not do that, right? Something that's so wrong with me that I just can't do it, and I don't know why. So eventually, I started listening to these, when they said, Joel, you have a disease of your mind, right? And you don't know how to stop, right? So if you have a disease, you take medicine or do treatment for that, right? So Narcotics Anonymous is my medicine to not use, right? They say when the pain gets great enough, you'll do something about it, right? So eventually, the pain got great enough, right? And I stopped using. And I found myself in a situation where, so I think there's different levels of honesty throughout your recovery, right? So when we first come in, like, as honest as I can get is to say my name's Jolene and I'm an addict, right? That's as honest as I can be. And for me, that's honest, right? And then we learn that if you just tell the truth, things get better, right? So for me, just telling the truth was my way out of trouble, right? If I tell it myself, like, means I don't have any consequences, right? Even after I quit using, I was still doing all the same behaviors that I did while I was using, right? So I was still stealing from my job, stealing from my ex-husband, just doing all of the things. I was still going to the dope house, but I wasn't buying dope. I was giving people rides from the dope house. That's okay. In the States, we had food stamps. I don't know if you guys... But I would go and I would buy food stamps for half price, so that's a little bit illegal. So I just continued to do those things, right? And I just felt horrible, but I didn't know why. We pass it on phone lists where we're from, right? So call before you use. I never used one of those. And so I happened to be in a meeting that day, and I had forged another check from my ex-husband, and I knew he was going to the bank that day, and he was going to find out, and it wasn't going to be a good situation when I got home, right? Because I was in a toxic marriage, because I didn't know. I didn't know what a healthy relationship was, right? You just
In my history, you just go to the bar, get shit-faced, go home with somebody, and boom, shacked up. That's how it works, right? You stay till the wheels fall off. So I knew it was going to be bad, and I happened to be in a meeting that day, and I heard a girl talk about she didn't share anybody's shit, right? When they told her stuff, she didn't share it, and I was like, yeah, right. Because the one thing I know is that, I hope I don't offend anybody, the one thing I know is that girls are catty bitches, right? Girls are catty bitches. I'm included in that, right? You just have to find your group of catty bitches, right? Where do I fit, right? She said she didn't share their stuff, and I was like, yeah, whatever. I left there, and my intention when I left that meeting was I was going to go to the police station and turn myself in for forging that check, because that was going to get me out of trouble, right? And for some reason, my higher power, I called that girl. Her name was on the phone list. And one of the only time I've used the phone list is I called that girl and I said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And she said, I don't know anything about that, but I don't really think you should. Why don't you just sit right there and I'm going to call somebody. So she called another woman and asked if she could give out her number. So she called me back and said, call this woman. And I said, okay. So I called the lady and I said, well, I'm sure that Serena told you what was going on. And she said, no, she didn't tell me one thing. She said she knew a woman who was in trouble and needed my help. Beep. One little light bulb went on, maybe people do mean what they say, right? Hello, God. No? Not God? Oh, okay. Close enough. I talked to this woman and I told her what I was going to do, and she said, yeah, it's not really a good idea because you're just doing it, you're not going to get out of trouble, you're going to make it worse, right? And your motive behind it is not correct, right? So she asked me about 14 times if I had a sponsor, and I was like, yeah. She's like, well, do you call her? No, I just have one, right? It's what you do. And so she made me, she pulled it out of me and asked me, so I would ask her to be my sponsor. And what happened was, she said, you're going to have to put on your big girl panties, and you're going to have to go home and tell them what you did. And the consequences are the consequences, girl. You're going to have to deal with it. Tough as that was, I did that, right? And from that moment, started to have a little faith in other people, right? People who had my back. So I started to work steps with that woman, I started to build a little support group, right, of women, because I'm a firm believer that, women work with women, men work with men. You do it different, cool. So I have this little support group, right? And they would tell me the truth, right? Sometimes I didn't want to hear that shit, and I got mad. But I listened, and I accepted that from them, right? So I started to work some steps, and what I started to realize was I wasn't as bad as I thought I was, right? And I wasn't defined by my past. Because I thought that all this horrible stuff that I had done, all the horrible things I did to my ex-husband, all of those things, I deserved whatever I got, right? It was my fine, or it was my duty. I had to stay there and take it because of all the things I had done. It was my payback. And what she said to me was, you're not defined by your past anymore, right? You're defined by what you're doing today and who you want to be today. That helped me, right? Because I knew I didn't want to be in that situation, right? I didn't want to be in that marriage. I got clean and I was like, I don't even fucking like you. I wouldn't even be your friend, right? But you just do what you do, right? And not that he's a bad guy. Not that I would think he'll listen to this, but yeah.
So she said to me, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm 37. Like, I've never lived on my own. I don't even know how to do that, right? Like, I'll never be able to be anything. This is it, right? Like, you just get married, and, like, he makes the rules, and he, you know, has the money. And she was like, you have a job. You're capable. No, I really didn't think I was, right? Like, it was so scary. That thought of doing something different was so scary. It kind of paralyzes you for a while. So she said to me, give yourself 30 days. And if nothing changes, you should probably do something. Well, it took me a few 30 days, right? Keep setting another date. And finally, it happened, right? I was like, I'm moving out. I went and put a deposit on an apartment. My daughter at that time was a senior in high school, and I was like, shit, how's this gonna work? You know, I gotta go to work, she's gotta go to school, there's no bus that comes here. But we made it work, right? We came up with a plan, because one thing I learned here is to look for solutions, right? Because I always hate it when I ask somebody, like, I'll be telling somebody something, they're like, yeah, but I did that. Oh, but this is how it's gonna work. And that's where I was in that moment. But I started to lean into the solution, right? And I moved into this little tiny apartment where two people couldn't stand in the kitchen together because it was too small. You had to walk sideways to get into the bathroom because the doorway was very small. But it was mine, right? Like, I had a half of a sectional. I had a laptop for my TV on milk crates. But it was mine. And nobody could tell me what to do there, right? So I continued to work steps, and I gained a little more courage, right? And I said, I want a divorce, right? I want off this ride. I was met with some surprise, right? He said, you know, if you divorce me, you're never gonna have anything. This is all you're ever gonna have, is this shitty little apartment. This is all you're gonna have. I said, so be it, it'll be mine, but I'm good. Right? So that was a big step, right? And so these women in my support group, they were like, you can do it, blah, blah, blah. So then I was single in Narcotics Anonymous, and I've never been single, right? Like, I've always had somebody, like, one bad thing after another, one toxic thing after another. And so I didn't really know how to, I was 37, never been on a date, ever. Like I said, I just went to the bar, went home with them, that was it, right? So that was new for me, and like I said, my daughter was a senior in high school, so she was pretty hip to what was going on in life. Somebody called me up and asked me if I wanted to go out, and really what he meant was, like, he just wanted to come over to my house when I get off work. I started seeing this person, right? But he would only, I would only go there, he worked night shift, so I'd go there at like midnight, right? And then I would just go home. It didn't feel real good, but my daughter said, Mom, you're a booty call. I said, not me, no. I didn't even really know what that is, but no, that ain't me. What I had to realize is, like, that's not the person I want to be, right? That's not, I didn't work this hard to be like that, right? I was going to be that girl, because trust me, there's enough of them, and I judge the shit out of them, and I kind of apologize for that. But, I didn't see that guy anymore, right? And then I continued to work some steps. I did a fourth step. You know, I kind of figured out who I was, and I decided that, like, maybe my judgment wasn't as bad as I thought it was, right? And I started to trust myself a little bit. So somebody that I worked with asked me if they could give somebody my number, right? And I was like, sure. And so this guy called me up, and he said, hey, you want to go to dinner on Friday? I said, yeah. He goes, okay, I'll call you. Click. Okay, maybe that's how this works. A girl I worked with, she had kind of dated this guy, right? And so I, being like a woman of integrity, that's who I want to be, I went to her and I said, so-and-so asked me out to dinner. And she said, you know he raped me. And I said, what? She goes, yeah. And I said, well, I'm going to go anyway, right? More so just to like, you're not going to, I think at that point it was kind of like a piss and match, right? Like, I'm going to go anyway, I don't believe you kind of thing. So I went to the guy who had asked if he could give my number out, and I said, what the fuck? Like, why would you do that to me? And he said, I can guarantee you that never happened. He's a good guy, and I would never do that to you. All right, because then after I learned to trust what people say to me here, right? So when that guy called me and he said, let's go to dinner. Do you want me to pick you up? I said, I'll drive myself. So I met him at the restaurant. So for the first time in 37 years, I went on a date, right? A blind date. And it wasn't so bad. I don't really remember what all happened, right? And then we left there to go for coffee. He said, oh, if you want to drive with me, I said, I'll drive myself, right? That night we went and walked around, there's a park where we're from, it's lake, and we sat on a bench, and he said to me, you're the kind of girl I could take home to my mom. And I don't know about you ladies, but I was never the kind of girl people wanted to take home to their mom, right? Like, oh no. Maybe this Narcotics Anonymous thing was working, right? I was turning into somebody people wanted to take home to their mom. The one thing I didn't do with that relationship and these women helped me, I didn't stay the night at his house. I'd like to say I didn't sleep with him, but that's not true. I respected myself enough to not just like move in with him and shack up and do all those things, like, because I wanted something different this time, right? And, like, I deserved something different. And I finally started to believe that, right? Like, I deserved to be treated well. I deserved to be loved. And not just for what I can give you, right? Fast forward a little ways, and that guy asked me to marry him. So here we are. I like to say my first marriage was my practice marriage. Now I know what not to do. And it was the one and only time anybody ever proposed to me and they weren't drunk and neither was I. So there's that. So we started to build this life together, right? And I didn't really know how to do that. And these women, they held me up when I didn't know how to hold myself up. And I'll go back a little bit. When I first started dating Joel, we started dating in August. He officially asked me to be his girlfriend in September. Right after that, in October, his mom got diagnosed with cancer, right? So I had a choice to make, right? We hadn't been dating that long. I could cut and run. I don't want to deal with that, right? But that's not who I am. And Narcotics Anonymous showed me, like, you show up, right? You be accountable. And you walk beside him through this, right? This is how you do it. You stick it out. Because again, that's uncomfortable, right? So I was able to go to these women and talk to them about how to help Joel. They walked me through that, right? Like, Joel had his support group that helped him through that. And I had mine to help me help him, right? Because I didn't know how to do that. Because I don't think that we come in here knowing how to do those things. Like, we come in here like, how do I be a mom? How do I be a daughter? How do I be a wife or a girlfriend? Like, we don't know how to do that because we're toxic people when we come in here. And if you don't know how to do that, that's okay. There's plenty of people here who can help you, right? Because they've done it before you. So now you can use their experience, right? So that's what I did. And, then Joel's mom passed away in January, right? We had moved in together at that point, right? We lived together 5 days, and Joel's mom passed away. And his parents had been married a really long time, so it was really tough for his dad. So Joel's dad said, don't leave. Joel said, I'm not. I'll stay here for 2 years with you, right? So then I had another choice to make. Am I going to stay in my house, or am I going to move into that house, right? Which was tough because Joel's dad is actively using, right? But again, like, Narcotics Anonymous helped me walk through that. Addiction in my family runs rampant, right? So I had a niece who was actively using, and she had a son who was 6 at the time, and she couldn't take care of him. So I did, right? I went and took him from her, and I remember saying to Joel, like, I'm gonna go pick up Corbin, right? And he said, for good. And I said, no, I'm gonna pick him up. You know, he's gonna stay at our house tonight, and tomorrow we're gonna meet at the school and enroll him in school, right? Enroll him in kindergarten. And she never showed up, right? So I have her kid, and she never shows up. She's not running him up for 3 weeks. I don't know where she's at. So I was like, we can't do this to him, right? We didn't have anything for him. We reached out to people in Narcotics Anonymous, and they showed up, right? They gave us clothes. They told me how to do this, right? And my kid was grown by this point, so I had to practice tough love. But you know what it showed me is like what my parents went through when I was using, right? And how hard that is, right? Having to say, like, she got clean and we gave him back. But that was tough. That was tough because he had a lot of issues and he had anger issues and he would be at school and he would throw desks. And, you know, my parenting style was like, okay, you're going to throw a desk, I'm going to spank you. Like, that's what didn't really work out for him that well. He didn't take to that very well, but Joel showed up, right? So I allowed Joel to take the reins on that, right? And walk him through that because he was stronger at that point than I was, right? So we learn in here to let go of control and allow other people to help us, right? Help me do this, right? I had a little bit of time clean, and I decided I was entitled to some shit, right? Because we get clean, we get a job, we get our lives back. But then I wanted some stuff, right? So now I got married, we bought a house. I wanted a baby, right? And I'm old, guys. Way too old to be having babies. But I couldn't have kids, right? And so when Joel and I first got together, that's the first thing I said, you know, I can't have kids. So if you want kids, you can't be with me, right? He said, no, I'm good. I changed my mind, and I decided I wanted a baby. And Joel is a happy wife, happy life kind of guy. So he was like, well, let's find a solution, right? So adoption, Joel has a little bit of a history, like he's a felon, and they don't really let you adopt babies. So we were like, okay, we can get a surrogate, right? And like, okay. So we're doing this, and in the meantime, Joel had a daughter who was living in Arizona, and he hadn't seen her for like, since she was a year and a half. And we knew she was there, and we just didn't know how that was gonna work, like how we were gonna be able to see her, or if ever, right? So I'm wanting a baby and doing all this, and Joel's struggling with what he's struggling with, and we like go to the fertility doctor, and then we're ready. We made the appointment. We're gonna go. We have to pick out a donor egg, right? Because my eggs aren't any good because I'm old. I'm asking people in Narcotics Anonymous, like friends of mine, like, oh, you want to carry my baby? Like, oh, it's crazy. Now I look back and I think, what was I doing? But then all of a sudden, like, I noticed, right? I learned to pay attention here, right? Pay attention to other people and what's going on. And Joel was crazy. He was batshit crazy. Like, that's not my husband. And he had to say to me, like, I didn't mean it. I don't really want to do this, right? I just said that because I wanted you to be happy. And I was devastated, you guys. I was devastated. And it was horrible, right? I was devastated. And it was all about, why not me, right? Why not me? Why am I not good enough, right? So then I got angry, right? And I got even more entitled. And Joel was, we were in this custody case, trying to be able to see Joel's daughter. And he, the judge finally let him see her. And so he flew down to Arizona. And when he came back, I said, did you look at property while you were there? And he said, no. And I said, no, we have to go there, right? We can't be here and he'll be there. Like, we have to go there. But I'm going first, right? So I said, I'm going to go first. And I just want to be Jolene W. and not known as Joel's wife, right? Because we come from a small town. Joel's a, you know, pretty big fish in a small pond. And so everybody knew him, right? And then knew me as his wife. So I just wanted to be me, right? Just Jolene W. And he said, okay. So we rented an apartment, jumped out in faith. I, after 41 years in Washington State, packed up and moved to Phoenix, Arizona, right? I visited there one time. Like I said, I was entitled. I felt entitled, and now I was pissed because Joel had crushed me, right? So I said, all right, we'll live in this apartment. And I said, but then I want a house, I want a pool, I want a puppy, and I want a new car, right? And Joel gave me all of those things. I got two houses, two puppies, three new cars, and I was fucking miserable, right? Because the stuff can't fill that hole, right? There's a hole in there and it can't fill it. What fills it is my God and doing the work that we come in here and we do, right? Like I said, when I first came in here, I wasn't clean, right? So when I first went to Arizona for the first 6 months, like, I just hid out. I hid out. I would go to meetings and I would, meet people. And but I didn't have a sponsor when I got there. I sponsored myself for 6 months. Don't do that. Don't do that, my friends. Bad. Because, you know, my disease talks to me, right? It talks to me in my own voice and it tells me things sound really good, right? And it will justify some shit for me. So before Joel even got there, I probably racked up a lot of money on a credit card and gained about 40 pounds because I was eating three meals a day and just trying to fill that hole with some other stuff, right? So just because we take drugs out of the picture, you guys, it doesn't mean you're cured. There's so many other things because, like I said, it's a disease of your mind, right? So I can't do dope. I can't smoke because I quit smoking. But I can eat and I can spend some money in secret, right? And it all starts with one little secret. At one point, Joel and I weren't eating sugar, right? We weren't eating sugar. And for some reason, I was at work one day and Joel had called me and said, hey, did you deposit that check? And I was like, yeah, I did. It was my money. The check was in my purse. And I don't know why I couldn't just say, no, I haven't done that yet. But I didn't want him to be disappointed or whatever. So that little bitty lie, as soon as I said that, you guys, picture this. So as soon as I hung up the phone with him, I got up, I walked into the kitchen at work, and I started eating, right? I started eating pretzels, because we were no bread, no sugar, right? So that woke it up. And this is gonna sound kind of silly, but so after work that day, I went to the gym, and the whole time at the gym, I'm thinking about going, we have this little gas station called the Quick Trip, and they have fabulous ice cream and maple bars. And like the whole time at the gym, that's what I'm thinking, right? Obsessing over fucking maple bars. I'm obsessing, right? And so I leave the gym. I go straight to the gas station. I go in, I get a maple bar and an ice cream, and I go out to my car. I'm parked in the back. I lock the door, scoot down in my seat, right? Just like if I was using, right? And it's the whole behavior, right? I'm just like I'm using. And I eat the ice cream and I eat the maple bar, and then I was like, shit, what did I just do, right? Like, just like when you would use against your will, I just put the dope in my body, now what? Shit. So I was like, okay. Got out, I threw all the garbage in the garbage can to get rid of the evidence. And I started to drive home, which was not very far, and I was like, shit, like, what am I gonna do? The thought to just go home and tell Joel that never occurred. That didn't occur. It was, what am I gonna do to get out of this problem, right? Okay, well, I'm gonna go home and throw up, right? That's it, I'm gonna get it out of me, it's no big deal. And then I was like, I hate to throw up, I can't fucking do that. So here we are, I had to go home and tell the truth, right? And I know that sounds crazy to you, but, or maybe it doesn't, because maybe you guys get it. But it was just the same behavior as if I was using, same exact behavior, right? Because I wasn't honest, right? I wasn't honest. Just like, you know, I wasn't honest with Joel when we first started dating about wanting a baby. I thought if I wanted a baby and he didn't, or I couldn't, like, I wouldn't be good enough, right? So that's a big theme in my life, is like, I'm not good enough, right? Not good enough, I'll never be good enough, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Narcotics Anonymous helped me kill that lie, right? I didn't get a baby, but at that point, Abby was 9, and she was so cute and sweet, and, you know, I was something new, so I was a stepmom or a bonus mom, and she, you know, everything was good. And then she turned 12, and my goal set, you know, and pretty convinced, she became the devil, right? And so, like, I was 12 once, I was 13 once, right? But, and my daughter was 12 and 13, but you guys, I was high, so I don't know what she was doing, right? I don't know. I had to lean into that, right? Like, Joel's sponsor always says, camp on that. Because that was tough, you guys. That was tough that I wasn't like, hey, you little shit, we're not doing that, right? Like, Joel's the type of guy that's like, I appreciate you telling me that. Yeah, thanks for your honesty. And she's just throwing mean stuff at him, right? And I want to be like, we're not doing that here. But I had to let go of control, right? Let him do his job as a dad, right? He has to fall on his face all by himself, right? We've been navigating that. And every year, I would get crazy, right? Just crazy. Bipolar here, screaming. Here I'm so happy, I'm crying, I'm throwing shit, right? And I can never figure out why, right? I figure out, I must need some medicine for that, it's gotta be that. I was at my home group one night, and at our home group, we have tickets, right? So these seats, and then there's these tickets, and if your ticket gets called, you have to go up and share. And the topic that night was like, working your program. Like, how are you working your program, right? Yeah, okay. So my number got called, and I went up, and I said, you know what, I don't really know. I don't know what's missing in my life, but here's the thing, is that I come here, I come to meetings, I work steps, I have a sponsor, I sponsor women, I do H&I, go to women's prison, like, but something's not fucking working, right? Because I'm miserable. And I'm doing the work, but apparently it's not good enough, right? And I have a new sponsor in Arizona at that point. We were going to do a second step the next day, right? We were going to go over it, and Joel's sponsor said, what, you know, what's wrong with you? And I said, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. And again, he said, well, you should camp on it. People were coming up, oh, we're going to pray for you, blah, blah, blah. Like, you guys, I have a God, and I pray, but I never really, like, prayed, right? I never really believed. That night I went home, and the next morning I woke up, and I was like, I know what's wrong with me. Like, I have to change my clean date. So I called Joel, and I said, I gotta change my clean date. I'm sure he wondered what happened between 5 a.m. and 7 when I got up. And so the reason for that is, like, when I first came in here, I was on opiate replacement therapy, right? Prescribed by a doctor, suggested by my counselor at treatment. I had talked to numerous sponsors about that. They were like, yes, you guys prescribed, yeah, you claim that teen time, blah, blah, blah. And so I think, but you guys are always something telling me that that wasn't true, right? And for me, what I had to do was change my teen date. And in a month there, what I had to do, because who do I want to be today? A woman of integrity and accountability. And I want to be honest above all. Like, I want to be an honest person, honest with myself, honest with you. So what I knew is, I knew that I had done the Suboxone program for a year, but then I knew I was living shady and I was living dirty for the next year and a half, right? Without Suboxone, without dope. Like, I wasn't being a good person and I wasn't living congruent to the spiritual principles that we practice in Narcotics Anonymous. So I, my original date when I came in was 10/8/9. And that day I woke up and I said, I'm gonna change my teen date to 3/5/12. So you can do the math, there's a little more than a year of Suboxone, right? What I realized was the reason I never wanted to change it was because of pride. Like, I don't want to say I only have this much time or I only have this much time, right? It's not really about that. It's about what's going on inside, right? And so I changed it. And if you think about it, Joel was probably dating a newcomer. He didn't know that. And I didn't know that. So, you know, fast forward a little bit. So the next, that day, when I decided to change my teen date, like, that's the day I was going over my second step with my sponsor, right? Like, came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, right? I started to believe in this power, right? And so then you turn your will and your life over, and then shit starts to happen. So I'm a person, I need tangible evidence of stuff, right? Like, you're gonna tell me there's a God, show me. Show me something, right? Okay. So last year, I kept, it actually started a year ago, December. So I would see on the back of cars, and I don't know if you guys see it here, my husband needs a kidney, my wife needs a kidney, right? Blah, 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 call this number. And I was like, my God, like, if my husband needed a kidney, I would do anything to help him, right? My kidney needed a kidney, I would do anything, right? And I was like, these poor people. Well, it kept happening, right? Like, I kept seeing it. Here, there, I'd ask people, you know what, they didn't see it. I'm like, I'm only seeing this shit? Like, am I crazy? I would see it on Facebook. Excuse me, so I decided, I was like, that's my sign, like, I need to donate a kidney, right? So I went home and I said to Joel, like, I want to donate a kidney. And I do a lot of crazy shit, you guys, and I was like, hey, we're going to order this pill for our diet, and we're going to drink this juice, like, so he's like, oh, whatever, you know, like, another one of your crazy ideas. He goes, so if you're serious about that, we can put something on social media. And I said, well, wait a minute, let me pray about this, right? So, we went to an event that night, a Day of the Dinosaurs event. It's like a speaker jam kind of thing. And I was telling our friend Lance about it, about my epiphany about this. And him and I were fighting. He's like, oh, I'm going to donate one before you, blah, blah, blah. My friend Jay from behind me said, Jolene, if you're serious, I know a guy. Every great story starts with, I know a guy. He said, I know a guy. I know a guy who needs a kidney. It's my boss or my coworker, and he just went back on dialysis. He got a kidney before, and now it's failing 3 years later, so now he's back on dialysis. He's back on dialysis 3 days a week, 4 hours a day. And I was like, well, hell, I'll give it a shot, right? Must be my sign from God. So I gave Jay my number to give to this guy, and I go, I don't know. A few weeks goes by, and I say, Jay, your guy hasn't called me, like, you know? He goes, Jolene, he can't call you and ask you for an organ. Like, if you really want to do it, you're going to have to call him. And I said, oh, okay. So I called him, and I left a message, and I said, hey, I heard you're looking for a kidney. I have two, and I'll give you one, right? So he called me back, and he was totally thinking, who is this crazy broad? But he said, you know, if you're serious, here's what you need to do. And then you'll have to do this if you make it that far, right? So I went down, I got my blood tested, and I'm pretty universal at O, so check, that matched. Okay, and then we had to do this like antigen test, right, to see if my perfect match, right? I'm winning at this. I had a plan in my mind, like I want to do it the first week of May because I'm in between vacations and I'll have time to do it then. And you know, my God had a different plan, right? So I had to jump through all these hoops. And you guys are probably the healthiest person you know, because I've had every test known to man. So they do all this stuff. Well, then you know, things kept tripping up, so I couldn't donate it when I wanted to. So obviously God's will, not mine. They were like, oh, your heart rate's low. You need to see a cardiologist. Oh, this is, you know, you need to do this test. And I was like, okay, well, let's shoot for the first week of June, right? And guess what? Something else came up. And so I had to have this little test where they ran a camera down my throat and anyway, so boom, came back, it's okay, right? So I had to go to the committee. And mind you, I still never met this guy. I don't know him. I'm texting with this random stranger. And for the longest time, I didn't make him a real person. And then I stalked him on Facebook, and he became real. So at this point now, I knew he was a father and a husband. And I did not want to let him down, right? So when all these things were happening, I was like, shit. They gave me a call, finally. It went to committee. I passed. I passed the psych eval. It was a two-hour psych eval. It was crazy. But I passed, and they let me call him. So I freeway Joel, and I called him, and it was June 13th, and I called him, and I said, hey, are you busy on June 28th? And he said, nope, and as a matter of fact, it's my 11-year clean date. Like, you can't make that shit up. So on his 11-year clean date, he's kind of an and a guy, do you know what that is? Like, clean and sober, so I gave him an AA coin and an NA coin, and a kidney, all in his clean date, right? I gave him a kidney, and there was a lot of, it was hard because I like narcotics, and they wanted to give me narcotics, and so in the beginning I was like, hey, I'm just going to take some ibuprofen and I'll be good. Joel's like, you're giving away an organ, like, ibuprofen ain't going to do it. I go, yeah, I'm going to do that. They told me no. That was really scary because in all the time I've been clean, I've never had anything happen where I had to have any kind of medication. And now it was like self-induced. We talked about it. We leaned into the experience of other members who have come before and who have done that and know how to get through that and get through it clean, right? And so Joel talked to people, I talked to people, we had a plan in place. They made me go see this addiction specialist who wanted to put me on Suboxone. I was like, no. And Joel helped advocate for me because I let go of some control and I listened to some suggestions, right? Which is hard to do, you guys, that's really hard to do. Because I want to be the boss of everything. And so Joel held my medication. I didn't know where it was. I didn't go looking for it, like, you know, and he would always ask me, are you sure you're hurting, right? And at first I was offended by that. Like, what do you mean? But because our disease is so cunning and baffling, like, it can slip in anywhere, right? And that'll mess with your head. Because I know that one day, like, the day after I had the surgery, I was up, I was walking around, no pain meds, I was good. The next day, I had to take some pain meds, maybe because I overdid it, but your disease plays tricks on you. Like I said, it talks to you in your own voice, and it was probably like, oh, hey, why are you taking that? Makes you feel good? Mm-hmm. You know? So that was tough, but I had to say it out loud and I had to talk about it, right? So I gave away the kidney. 9 days later, I went back to work like nothing happened. Joel played golf with him like a month ago. Like it gave me a purpose, right? Something, and then there was my tangible evidence, right? Because God showed up. God showed up. He decided that the guy needed a kidney on his clean date. That's why he was doing all of those things, and so it gave me something to believe in, right? So I was able to believe in my God a little bit more. And so like I said, this disease is alive and well in my family, right? So I have a brother, an older brother, actively using, but doesn't think he has a problem. I have his daughter, his oldest daughter, actively using, thinks she's gonna get this thing without Narcotics Anonymous. And I'll tell you that this disease has taken out my family members one a year for the last 3 years. That brother I just talked about, his wife of 26 years, died of an overdose, right? And then my brother's son, my nephew, he's right here with me, also dead by the disease addiction, right? He was quadriplegic because he had gotten in an accident when he was younger, so he was in a wheelchair, and his hands didn't work real well, and clearly he couldn't shoot himself up. But he was, his so-called friends who were taking care of him saw that he was sick and he didn't want to go to the hospital, and so they thought that the best thing to do would be to give him a shot, put a note on his chest that said, "I'm dying, call 911 and leave him there." And so I'll tell you, as horrible as this sounds, like my nephew died encrusted in his hospital bed in his house, encrusted in his own feces. He had an open wound that had maggots in it because nobody would take care of him, right? All his friends just came there to get high, and then they left him like that. So for those of you who think it can't happen to you, it can. It can. And his baby sister, so my youngest niece from that brother, she always said, I'm not like my sister. I don't have a problem. And I said, you do, right? But I can't force you, and I can't make you believe that you're addicted. On the 29th of December, she was found dead in a park. The person she was using with dumped her because he didn't want to get in trouble for helping her get high one last time, right? So she left behind two babies, a husband, and there it is. Like, it will take you out quicker than you think if you don't think you have disease, right? The minute you deny it, it'll slip in, right? Because I've had times in my recovery where I've thought, yeah, maybe I'm not, right? Maybe I can just have a glass of wine. But for me, a glass of wine turns into a bottle of wine, turns into a hangover, so I like the bottle of pills better, right? And what that does for me is I lose my family, I lose my job, I lose everything, and then I want to die, but I can't because my God doesn't let me die, right? He wants to show you how this thing works. So when I come in here, right, I do the things that we're supposed to do, which is get a sponsor, I work the steps, I sponsor women, I go to meetings, I'm of service. Sometimes for me, service starts at home. And for me this year, I did another fourth step. And I think that the more sets of steps I do, the more God helps me be ready, right? Because I think if I had done what I did this year, I couldn't have I couldn't have done it, right? So like I said, I have an adult daughter, and I heard somebody share about this earlier. When I was about 18 months clean, I found out she was a cutter. That shot my theory that I didn't really fuck her up in my disease. I really thought that she came out unscathed through that whole thing, right? No effects on her. There was effects, right? So I had I've made amends to her, right? But she was so angry with me. So when I was doing the support step, she was, I'm like, resentless. I was like, I don't know what her fucking problem is, right? Like, because she's 25 now. I'm like, she lives with me. Joel and I do this and this and this for her. I told her I'm sorry. So then when she gets an attitude with me, like, I'll do something with Joel's daughter, and then my daughter sees it and is jealous. And I'm like, so I couldn't wrap my head around that. When I said to my sponsor, like, I don't know what's wrong. Like, I told her I'm sorry. She's like, yeah, you did. But have you attached any emotion to that? And sat down across the table from her and told her, like, I am sorry. I can't imagine what you went through. I can't imagine how scared you were in all of those situations. And I said, no. She said, well, you need to. Again, you have to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. So I had to sit down across the table from her and listen to her tell me things that had happened to her as a result of my addiction, right? Because I just blinders on, nothing wrong with my kid, right? Not true, right? You can't buy that kind of healing, right? All the things I was giving her or doing for her, like, you can't buy healing, right? So that was one of the gifts that we get here, right? Like, so I was able to help her heal as well as heal myself a little bit, right? Because like I said, we don't come in here knowing how to be parents, right? We just wait and do the best we can, and then when we're clean, we're like, shit, right? So I think that, when I said to Joel when we couldn't have a baby, I said, oh, you know, why not me, right? Why not me? Why am I not good enough? My friend Katie said the other day, I would say, why not me, right? Or why is this happening to me? Right? She said, why not you, right? Why not you? So in a negative way. And I said to Joel on the plane the other day, I said, yeah, why not me? Why not me go to Denmark and share, right? Because I was like, why did they pick me? I'm still pretty sure they picked the wrong person. They got the wrong CD. But why not me, right? Maybe it's my turn. And it's really, like, uncomfortable to say that, right? Here's the deal. I jumped on an airplane, scared shitless, to fly to a whole other country where I don't understand anything you guys say, unless it has to do with Narcotics Anonymous, right? So when we were in the meeting the other night, you heard them talk about getting back to the basics, the keys to freedom. They talk about love, right? And I'll finish with this. So the other night, we went to a meeting here, and the topic was the keys to freedom. And for me, the keys to freedom is kind of like a recipe, right? 1, 2, and 3. And then what we do to stay here, right? Like, so we have to admit it. We got to admit we're powerless and we're in some kind of shit and life is chaotic. And then we have to believe that there's something bigger than us that can help us, right? Because I don't believe any one of you walked in here of your own free will and just, like, got this thing through osmosis. It's like, my life is wonderful. You have to believe in something. And then you have to be willing, right? You have to be willing to let let that higher power care for you and do for you. And you have to wait for the results, right? And I heard somebody say earlier, like, about trusting the process. I used to hate it when people would say that. I don't want to trust no fucking process. Like, I don't want to do that. But when I do, life gets easier, right? Doesn't get any less painful, because life shows up, right? And then I continue to do the work, right? I continue to work steps. I continue to talk to my sponsor. I go to my home group. I'm of service. I have sponsees. And that's how this thing works, right? We give back what was so freely given to us. Like I believe the theme is bringing the message, right? That's what we do. We bring the message to others. And I know I'm probably short on time, but that's what I got, my friends.